July 4th, 1995, Wayne City, Illinois. 38-year-old Sue Marshall Gerslinger and her 13-year-old daughter have missed the family 4th of July get-together. An ex of Sue's is back in town, and unbeknownst to her relatives, Sue and her daughter are going to the town's 4th of July celebration and fireworks with him. The next day, Sue's car is found halfway submerged in a pond in Wayne County, filled with blood. When two bodies are found in a different rural pond, this small town where neighbors knew each other by name and children played freely found itself altered forever. This is Sue and Mindy Marshall, murdered on the 4th of July. Hey y'all, I'm Chris Calvert.
And I'm her husband, Rob Potter. Welcome to Hitch to Homicide.
For better or worse.
Till death do us part.
Everybody.
Yes, welcome, welcome, welcome. And for our Irish, Welsh, Scottish, Gaelic friends.
Oh, these are our ancestors, Rob.
I know. Folcha, folcha, folcha.
Yeah, very nice. Very nice.
There you go. And I just realized before we started filming, I'm looking at the monitor here and I realize that I didn't even comb my hair or do anything to it. So I kind of look like hell today.
You don't look like hell. You do not look like hell. He's been working really hard in the backyard the past couple of days. Yeah. But I did want to say, you do have the Till Death Do Us Part shirt going on today.
I do. Look at that.
It's a skeleton.
With a rose.
With a rose between his teeth.
Playing a guitar.
Playing a guitar. There you have it. Yeah. There you have it. Well, wherever you are listening, be sure to like, rate, and review, subscribe. That helps other people to find us. You can join our closed Facebook group, The In-Laws and Outlaws.
Please do.
It's really big, lots of fun. Everybody's great in there. We love you guys.
It exponentially gets crazier every week.
Each week. And some of you post the exact same thing, and it is absolutely okay.
Yeah.
Great minds
stink alike.
Think alike. Oh, stink alike. Great minds think alike. I try to get in there and like everybody's stuff or laugh at it, especially. That's usually what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Is laughing. But you can also watch us on YouTube.
Yeah. And last count, we were nearing 300
subscribers. We're at 303 right now.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. I didn't check this morning.
I'm the one who's checking, not him.
I was in the backyard working.
True. Well, I picked a 4th of July case. Yesterday was the 4th of July. We've had relatives in town. We had fireworks last night and a cookout and all the things everybody probably did in the United States, because I know we have lots of listeners around the globe.
Right.
But here in the United States, it was Independence Day, and we tend to go a little bit crazy sometimes.
Yes, we like to make a lot of noise and eat a lot of food.
Yes, we do. And this is a case about this teeny tiny little town, and some bad stuff went down on the 4th of July back in 1995.
Okay.
Before I get started, let me thank some sources. The Southern Illinoisan. I'm just annoying now. Sorry. The Northwest Herald, the Effingham Daily News, the Daily Republican Register, the Daily Illini, that one I can say, the Daily Chronicle, Oxygen True Crime, Homicide for the Holidays, and villageofwayne.org website.
All right. Well, you ready?
I am.
Okay, let's do it.
Eleanor Sue McKinney is born on December 4th, 1956 in Wayne County, Illinois. Her parents were Lauren Allen and Eleanor Phillips McKinney. She's the baby of five siblings.
Okay.
There's not much out there on Sue's early life. Wayne County in 2020 had 16,000 people. And Wayne City, Illinois is much smaller.
Oh, wow.
In 1995, the population was 1,000 people.
Yeah, it's a metropolis.
It's just a booming little town.
Yeah.
Today, so in 1995, they have 1,000 people. How many people do you think live there today?
1001.
According to their website, 1,100 people live in the tiny town of Southern Illinois. It's a little area called Little Egypt.
Hmm.
And in 1995, it was a place where nobody locked their doors. Nobody took the keys out of their car, which is just mind-boggling to me.
Yes, it's mind-boggling.
It's mind-boggling. But I think there are still small towns where people do this.
Right.
It was formed in 1819 and is named after General Mad Anthony Wayne, an officer in the Revolutionary War.
Okay.
And the area is called Little Egypt because in 1799, a Baptist minister, it's always a Baptist minister getting stuff started, right?
Backseat Baptist.
Yeah, a Baptist minister named John Bagley dubbed the fertile highlands and bottoms near Edwardsville, Illinois, the land of Goshen. Hmm. And this is a biblical reference to ancient Egypt because the Mississippi floods the plains just like the Nile Valley.
Okay.
And there are lots of Indian mounds in this area because this is a heavily populated area where Native Americans lived. And they looked at these Indian mounds like pyramids.
Gotcha.
And on the water tower in Wayne City is the proclamation, best beans in Little Egypt.
Well, everybody's got to have a claim to fame.
They're talking about soybeans, y'all, just in case you were wondering. It's not Boston beans.
So it's not the scene in Blazing Saddles.
I don't know what that is. Oh, around the campfire. Well, they do have bean days.
Oh, really?
They have a bean days festival. Yeah.
Okay.
But I just want to kind of give you a little background on Wayne County, because this is where Sue grew up. She worked in healthcare. One source made it seem like it was home healthcare, like for elderly folks.
Mm-hmm.
This was just when her own health would allow it, because she had really bad asthma, and she sometimes needed to tote around an oxygen tank with her.
Wow, that's really bad.
Yeah.
Huh.
Sue will be married a total of 5 times in her short 38 years, or 3 times. There are conflicting sources on this.
Okay.
Newspapers say 5. Some of the other sources say 3.
What's the difference between 5 and 3 in marriages?
Really, only 2 of them are going to matter to our story. We'll talk about 3 of her husbands in the story today.
Right.
I don't know anything about her first marriage, but her second marriage was in 1974 when Sue is 18 years old. She marries Johnny Marshall. These two will divorce in 1985, but not before having 2 kids.
Okay.
Michael is born in 1977, and Melinda, who they call Mindy, which is what I'm going to call her, is Mindy, is born on December 15th, 1981.
Okay.
Mindy is a beautiful girl, long, sandy blonde hair. She was an excellent student. She played on the girls' basketball team.
Hmm.
Sue's kids are pretty great, as you're going to find out here a little bit later.
Okay.
On September 17th, 1992, Sue marries Niels Christian Nielsen. Niels Christian Nielsen. He is, what? It made me think of Chaz Michael Michaels.
Yeah. Why would your parents do that to you?
I think his name is Christian Nielsen, and because his last name is Nielsen, everybody calls him Niels.
Gotcha.
That's what I think, but I could be wrong. But I did see him listed as Niels Christian Nielsen, Chaz Michael Michaels.
Oh, man.
Niels Nielsen is 20 years old. He's born in Provo, Utah, where he had a childhood filled with misdemeanors. I read in one source that his juvenile detention file was 1.5 inches thick. And at the age of 12, he had actually held a knife to the throat of a 6-year-old girl, threatening to kill her.
So he was an overachiever.
Well, obviously some psychological issues happening here.
A little bit, yeah.
But somewhere along the way, his parents divorce and his mom, Vinnie, moves to Wayne City. And eventually, Niels follows.
Hmm.
Niels and Sue meet and marry. He is 20. She is 37.
Wow.
20 and 37.
Wow, that's a cougar.
I know. I even wrote, Niels caught himself a cougar.
Yeah. Jeez.
But this cougar's not going to be held captive for very long.
Okay.
Because once they're married, Sue discovers that there's a warrant out for Niels' arrest in Utah.
Surprise.
So she turns him in to local authorities.
Oh, man.
And the guys from Utah make the trip to Wayne City and pick his butt up and haul him back to Utah.
Okay.
And Sue goes in front of a judge to get the marriage annulled. Mm. All told, they were married for 10 days.
Okay.
10 days. For the next 16 months, Niels is behind bars in Utah. But as soon as he's let out and he's on parole, he goes back to Wayne County and lives with his stepfather, George Lathrop, and his mother, Vinnie.
Okay.
Now, when you're on parole, you're not supposed to leave the state that's paroled you.
Yeah.
But he's gone on back to Southern Illinois.
Okay.
Now, somewhere in there, Sue married a man named Jim Gelsinger. But by the time she meets Niels, she either marries him after Niels or before Niels. It's very unclear to me. Somebody's going to email me and tell me what an idiot I am for getting it wrong. I'm just going to tell you that right now. But she did marry a man named Jim Gelsinger.
Okay.
But by the time Niels is back in town, sounds like a song, Sue is again a single woman.
Okay.
Now, her son, who is 19, is off to diesel mechanic school. So like I said, her kids, they want to make lives, you know, for themselves. They're coming out of this tiny little town and they're ready to do something big with their lives. And he's gone.
Sure.
He's at diesel mechanic school. And it's just Sue and Mindy, who is now 13 years old.
Okay.
But while Niels has been sitting in jail in Utah, Sue has been getting involved in drugs. And in fact, when July of 1995 rolls around, Sue had an upcoming trial date for possession of cocaine.
Wow.
I also read that she'd worked with law enforcement to target a drug dealer in the past. So she's worked with the police before.
Okay.
But she does have a pending trial date for a possession of cocaine charge.
Got it.
But in 1995, Sue had really found God. She and Mindy went to church on a regular basis, and she was really working hard on herself.
Okay.
But when the summer of 1995 rolls around, Sue is seeing Niels again when he makes it back into town. So these two have kept this relationship going, even though he's been in jail in Utah and she has been in Wayne City.
Okay.
Why? I don't know. Her family's going to say the same thing. Why? We don't know.
Even after she turned him in.
Even after she turned him in.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's love.
Well, I don't think it is. I don't think it is. About a week before the 4th of July, Sue is on the phone with her sister, who can hear Neil's voice in the background.
Okay.
And she says to her sister, she pleads, do not trust Niels. Don't trust this guy. Hmm. Because the family believes that Niels is trying to work his way back into Sue's life.
Gotcha.
Or so it would seem.
Right.
Because when he's not with Sue, he's telling people in Wayne City that he's, quote, tired of Sue's mind games, end quote.
Hmm.
Now, remember, there's 17 years difference between these two.
Sure.
And I was like, does he got some mommy issues, maybe?
Little Oedipus complex.
Something. Now, when the big day, the 4th of July, happens in little old Wayne City, Illinois, it's a big deal. Most small towns, the 4th of July in America, it's a big deal.
Right.
So there's a small town parade, there's red, white, and blue bunting everywhere, and of course, there are fireworks and family get-togethers. And on that day, Niels Christian Nielsen sees an old friend, Stephen Stump is his nickname, Garrett. You gotta love that. You gotta love that. Stump.
I don't even want to know why.
Stump Garrett.
Okay.
I didn't look up why they called him Stump, but it was even listed in the newspaper that way, that he goes by Stump.
Okay.
But Niels complains to Stump about Sue. The whole tired of her mind game stuff.
Okay.
But as these two chat about Sue, Niels makes a comment, quote, you might not ever see her again, end quote.
Whoa. Wow.
That's called foreshadowing.
I guess.
Yeah. This is what he tells Stump. Jeez. Well, happy 4th of July. Sue's mind games are killing me. You might not see her again.
Wow.
Sue and Mindy were supposed to be at one of these family gatherings, one of these family get-togethers for the 4th of July. It's their family. They even told their family that they would be there. But when they didn't show up, nobody really gave it much thought. They just figured, you know, they had something else to do. They're going to show up later.
Okay.
Now, I usually tell these stories in chronological order by the date that things happen. But in this one, I'm going to explain it a little differently because there's a lot of theories, and there are a lot of stories.
Okay, speak slowly. I'm a musician.
I will. On July 5th, 1995, the day after the big fireworks show and all the picnics, police receive a phone call from someone who's found something horrific. It's a car, a dark green Oldsmobile that is nose down, halfway submerged in a pond along Illinois State Road 242.
Wow.
Now, the first thing that's noticeable about the car, other than it's halfway into this pond, is there's blood on the driver's side taillight. And when they open the car, all they see is blood everywhere.
Wow.
Lots of it.
Wow.
And in one old newspaper article I found, they said it looked like dark red Jell-O.
Ooh.
So police get into the trunk and they find that there is blood inside the trunk as well. So the local police department, they call the Illinois State Police. I mean, this little town police department, I do want to tell you, a lot of times I give small town police departments a hard time that they bungle things or walk through crime scenes or whatever. But
right.
This little town's police department, they really did most of the heavy lifting on this crime.
They had it going on.
They really did. But they call in the state police, and Diane Cornell and David L. Wood from the state police department show up to help with the investigation.
Okay.
But on the scene is Detective J.B. Fletcher. And the car is pulled out of the water and processed, including running the plates, which come back to Sue Marshall Gelsinger.
Mm.
So they go to Sue's home, and they're thinking, please let her just answer the door and say, somebody stole my car last night. But Sue doesn't answer the door. She doesn't answer the phone. So they call Sue's family, who tell the police, Sue and Mindy never showed up for the family picnic.
Uh-oh.
And now her family starts to worry.
Sure.
And the police are thinking, from the looks of the inside of this car, which is covered in blood, they're not looking for two people. They're looking for two bodies.
Hmm.
Something that was interesting on the scene, there was a wooden furring strip pressed to the accelerator on the gas.
Oh, wow.
Like pressing it down so the car would go into the pond on its own and sink.
Yeah, you see that in mob movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nobody that smart is involved in this crime. I'll just tell you that right now.
Okay.
But it didn't make it into the pond, obviously.
Right.
And if you're like me and you don't know what a furring strip is, because I looked it up, in construction, furring strips are these thin strips of wood or other material that are used to level or raise surfaces of another material to prevent dampness, to make space for insulation, or to level and resurface ceilings or walls.
Mm-hmm.
And furring refers to the process of installing the strips and to the strips themselves. So now, like me, you know what a furring strip is.
Do you know what a shim is, though?
I've heard the term shim that. We'll just shim that up.
There you go.
That's not level. We'll just shim that up.
There you go. Furring strips and shims. It's construction workers' best friends.
Well, this is big. All so right. It's like a post. It's big.
Yeah.
Also inside the car are shell casings from a .32 caliber semi-automatic weapon.
This isn't looking too good.
And when they get to the trunk and they open it, they find that there is blood all inside, and there is also a bloody handprint on the inside of the trunk.
Mm.
And the police are worried that someone had been inside the trunk and was trying to get out.
Wow.
Somebody who was injured was inside the trunk.
That's scary.
So none of it's good. Bloody car, missing people, bullet casings. Folks, I think we got ourselves a murder here.
Yeah. What was our first clue?
In the little tiny town of Wayne City.
Right.
The next day, July 6th, the police set up a command center at the Wayne City Community Building, and every fireman, every EMS person, whether they were on duty or off duty, people with four-wheelers, people on horseback, the whole community comes together.
Sure.
Well, they're looking for Sue and Mindy.
Yeah.
So everybody's come together to do it. This community's really pulled together.
Sure.
And Mindy's brother, Mike, and Sue's son, he comes home to help look for his sister and his mom.
Okay.
So when you've got a missing person and three husbands, or possibly five, depending on which source you use, where do you suppose the police start their questioning?
Well, I would either be the husband or the boyfriend.
Till death do us part.
Yeah.
They're going to go talk to the husbands.
Yep.
First, they question the father of her children, Johnny Marshall. Where were you on the 4th of July? Well, he was at a cookout all day, and then he went to see the fireworks, and there are people. multiple people who corroborate his story.
Sure.
What about on the 5th, the day after? Well, I was at work, and his coworkers are like, yeah, he was here all day. And he even has a receipt from where he went to get lunch that shows he was near his place of work. Also, Johnny's distraught. This is his daughter.
Sure.
And it's the only daughter he has. She's the apple of his eye. He's very upset that his little girl is missing.
Right.
Then they ask Jim Gelsinger about his whereabouts on the 4th and 5th, and he wasn't even near Wayne City. So he's also ruled out.
Ironclad.
Yes. So they want to talk to Niels Christian Nielsen.
Chaz Michael Michaels.
Chaz Michael Michaels. And Niels Christian Nielsen, I just love saying it. I'm sorry. You're going to have to just deal with me saying it through the podcast because I can't help myself.
That's funny.
He agrees to speak with the authorities. He's been 16 months behind bars, and apparently these two talked to each other the whole time. She turned him in, even though the marriage was annulled. And on July 6th, he says, okay, I'll give you an interview. So he does. He comes into the police station.
Okay.
And here's his story.
Can't wait to hear this.
He wasn't far away from Wayne City, nor did he have a zillion witnesses like Johnny did to say he couldn't have been up to anything nefarious. No, Niels tells the police that on the 4th of July, he and Sue and Mindy rode around in her car, her Oldsmobile, all through rural Wayne County. Now, this isn't an uncommon practice. If you've ever lived out in the country, maybe not as much anymore because gas is too expensive to go for a joyride just for the sake of going for a ride.
Yeah.
But people in small towns still just go for a ride.
Yeah. I grew up in a very small town, lived way out in the country. There was 3 houses on the country block. And every time somebody drove by the house, we would all look out the window.
Yeah, you knew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who was that?
But he tells police that we drove around, we're watching the fireworks from the car as we drive. Then they headed back to Neil's house, or rather his stepfather's home, because he doesn't really have a house. He's shacking up with the stepdad and mom.
Yeah.
Apparently they ran out of gas. This is his story. And Niels tells the police that they didn't want to block traffic, so he pushed the car to the side of the road. And being the gallant white knight that he is, he walked off to buy a gas can and some gasoline before walking back.
Okay.
And when Niels gets back, he sees Sue talking to a white male in a red car. He's 5'10", 5'11", with brown hair, a beard, and a mustache. He said the guy was wearing a Harley Davidson t-shirt. And this is a guy that he doesn't recognize. And he gets all his information because the dome light is on in the car.
Okay, first of all, wait, before you go any further.
I know what you're going to say. It's exactly what the police said. What?
It's 5'11". How did you know that if he's
exactly.
In the car?
Exactly. Okay. The police are looking at him like, dude, he's sitting inside the car. How could you possibly know how tall he is?
Yeah.
Yeah. If brains were dynamite, Niels wouldn't have enough to blow his nose. It's one of Rob's favorite sayings that I use that all the time.
That's
he loves
one.
It.
That's a good one.
Niels says that Sue and Mindy get in and drive off in this red car, and he didn't know where they were going.
Yeah, right.
Now, if you were with Sue and Mindy on the 4th, and then on the 5th, their car is found covered in blood, nose first, in a pond. If you even cared the slightest bit for this woman and her daughter, I mean, if you cared enough to go get gas for her, right?
Yeah.
So why didn't you come forward in the beginning to tell the story to the police?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, like I was with them last night. This is a town of 1,000 people.
Right.
Everybody knows what happened.
Right.
Everybody knows what the police found.
Yep.
And he's just like sitting at home.
Eating Cheerios, watching cartoons.
Scratching his butt, doing whatever.
Yeah.
So police actually ask around about the red car. Why? For the exact same reason Rob just said. It's a small town.
Yeah.
If this is what the car looks like, who saw it? But in this teeny tiny little town, nobody had seen this person.
Yeah.
And they didn't know anybody who was driving a red car that fit the description that they didn't know already. Like, this is a stranger, right?
Yeah, well, and two, he's an idiot for saying it's a red car. He should have just picked a regular color that every other car in town is. You know what I mean?
Yeah, if brains were dynamite.
Exactly.
Not enough to blow his nose.
Yeah.
And it's going to get better, people.
Oh, cool.
Hang on to your panties.
I love stupid guys like this.
Well, police are thinking Niels Christian Nielsen's cord doesn't reach the outlet. And police ask if he would consent to the search of his bedroom. Hmm. Not the house where he's living with his stepfather and mother. Just his bedroom.
Really? Why?
Well, because they don't have a reason to look inside George's house.
Okay. Oh, okay. I see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they talk to his stepdad, George, who tells police, all these people know each other. I mean, this is a tiny place. Sure. They all know each other.
Yeah.
So the police talk to George, and George says, well, Niels came home around 9 o'clock, and he might have gone back out after that. But me and Vinny, we went to bed. Mm. They didn't give two firecrackers about the pyrotechnics that night. They just weren't around for it. They went to bed after
right,
that.
Right.
So if he came home after 9, then I actually looked this up. On the 4th of July in 1995 in Wayne County, Illinois, the sun set that night at 8:21 p.m. That's central time in the United States.
Right.
And the fireworks do not start until when? It's absolutely dark.
Yeah.
So how is he two places at the same time?
Right.
An officer asks George, are there any firearms in your house? Do you have any weapons? And George is like, yeah.
Come on back.
I'll show them to you.
I got my gun safe back here.
No gun safe, but there were guns. Okay. And police find 3 guns. And one of them is a .32 caliber semi-automatic pistol.
Yeah.
The exact spent cartridge found in the car and in the trunk of Sue's car.
Right.
Yeah.
Are they going to do a cartridge analysis?
Oh, hang on.
Okay. Sorry.
Don't jump ahead.
I'm getting in front of my skis here.
And the most interesting part of this is that 2 of the 3 guns are covered in dust. Covered. And 1 had been wiped clean.
Let me guess which one that was.
Go ahead and guess.
I bet it was the .32 caliber. Yeah.
Okay. It was the .32 caliber semi-automatic gun.
There you go.
And so the police are like, hey, can we take this gun? And we'd like to take those 2 boxes of ammo with it. Mm-hmm. And George says, sure, take it.
Go ahead.
Take it.
Let me know if you like it.
Yeah. Meanwhile, the families are still searching for Sue and Mindy. I even saw one report where Sue's family members were bringing meals to the officers at the community center where they'd set up their command center. It's a very Southern thing to do. I loved that.
Sure.
And the family was at the center a lot. They were checking in, looking for updates. And Niels would drive up and down the road in front of this community center, watching the family coming and going.
Really?
Just like Rob said, empty road. You see somebody drive. Who is that?
Yeah.
So they know it's Niels driving up and down the road.
Wow, that's creepy.
Now, one time, Mike, Sue's son, is outside the center. And Niels drives up, rolls down the window, and Mike looks inside the car, and he sees in the back his toolbox. It's in the back seat of Niels' car.
Hmm.
And he's like, what the heck, man? Those are my tools.
Yeah.
So Mike goes back into the center and tells the police, look it. Niels just drove up. My toolbox from my mom's house is in the back of his car. He stole my tools.
Wow.
So the sheriff has him file a formal report for theft. And because of the theft charge,
there you go.
Now the police have enough for probable cause to go and look for the tools. They're going to go look for the tools or other things they might see while looking for the tools.
Gotcha.
A judge grants them a search warrant on July 8th, 1995. They go back to George and Vinny's home, Neil's stepdad and his mom. Mm-hmm. And this time, police see an old trailer sitting on the property, and beside it were furring strips.
Ooh.
Just like the one that was used to hold down the accelerator in Sue's car when it went into the pond.
Let's match those wood types up.
Yeah.
And the pieces of the puzzle are coming together.
They are, but it's all circumstantial at this point.
Right.
But the police are like, this guy, we got to do something.
Right.
And they get an arrest warrant for felony theft. Hmm. That's all they've got because there's no body, no crime.
Right.
All they have are stolen tools at this point.
Well, listen, they got Al Capone on tax evasion, so they had to get him with something, right?
They just wanted something to contain him.
Yeah.
But it's enough to take him into custody. And according to Detective J.B. Fletcher, in that time in Illinois, you had to have probable cause within 48 hours or he can bond out. Mm. And that means the gun, the bullets, the shell casing, the furring strip, it's all circumstantial. And police are thinking these ballistics are going to be a match, but they're not going to get those results back in 48 hours.
Right.
And even when the testing is finished, a report has to be written up and then that is presented to a judge. So the clock is ticking.
Sure.
Tick tock.
The first 48.
That's right. Also on July 8th, two boys are fishing in a pond just off I-64 when, according to the boys, a big black bag floated to the surface.
Oh.
And it smelled horrible.
Oh.
And one of the boys' father, he heads over to the community center and there's one deputy on duty and this guy shows up with his 15-year-old son. Now, this is a different pond from where the car was found,
okay.
But it was only 5 miles away from where the car was found. And the boys tell the police they didn't touch anything, but boy, did it stink. Mm. Police are on the scene and Detective Fletcher sees this big bag out there in the middle of the pond. He has to wade out and get it. And according to him, it is heavy. Mm. He gets it on the shore. And I've seen an interview with this guy where he talks about the stench and the flies. And Detective Fletcher unzips the bag and, quote, human remains were looking at me, end quote.
Gosh.
He saw two skulls and what seemed to be a human vertebrae. Mm. And inside the duffel bag was also another 32 caliber shell casing.
Oh, wow.
Now, their skulls were badly burnt and they would have to be identified by their dental records.
Wow.
It was known that Sue was missing a tooth. So was one of the skulls. And on July 9th, the pathologist does an autopsy, and the dental records show that the skulls belonged to Sue and Mindy Marshall.
Yeah.
Sue had been shot twice in the head, and Mindy was shot three times in the head.
Jeez.
Their family's devastated, of course. Of course they're devastated.
Yeah.
But because their bodies have been burned, again, this is a very small town, police ask the neighbors of George and Vinny, Niels's mom and stepdad, hey, did you happen to see a fire on the 4th or the 5th of July?
Mm-hmm.
And their neighbors, one of them tells police, yeah, there was a big old fire on the 5th of July behind the Lathrop's home. It was massive. Mm-hmm. There was so much smoke. The neighbor thinks, well, they've used an accelerant.
Yeah.
But it was this huge fire, so they must have been burning something, quote, pretty big, end quote. Police go back to the county jail, and they get Niels out of his cell, and they start to grill him like a cheese sandwich. What's your timeline on the 4th and 5th, Niels Christian Nielsen?
Yeah.
And at this point, he has a brand new story for the police.
Oh, new and improved.
They're going to get a little better each time, too. He tells them that Sue had stolen some guy's wallet, and he was mad, and that guy tried to kill her. So police are tracking his wild goose chase stories.
Okay.
But everything he's given them is a dead end.
Right.
Then he said, well, I went up to the fireworks where he met some of his friends. So now he's trying to give himself an alibi.
Mm-hmm.
He's telling police, now it couldn't be me. I was at the fireworks. Well, were you at the fireworks or were you driving around with Sue and Mindy or were you getting gas and seeing the guy in the red car? So police think Niels Christian Nielsen has murdered Sue and Melinda and put them in the trunk of the car, walked away and then gone to the tail end of the fireworks maybe.
Gotcha.
With only a few hours left on their 48-hour time clock with this neighbor witness telling police there was this huge fire, they get a search warrant for, not inside the house, but the burn pile behind George and Vinny's home.
Ah.
And what do they find? Teeth, blonde hair, bits of bone, jewelry, house keys, car keys, and another 32 caliber shell casing.
Wow.
And the family is able to identify the jewelry and the house key and the car keys that they belonged to Sue. And there were two rings that belonged to little Mindy.
Wow.
On July 10th, 6 days after Sue and Mindy are murdered, they're hours away from allowing Niels to bond out of jail. So they need a confession.
Right.
because ballistics are still being processed, and in order to keep his butt in jail, they need him to trip up and say something that will give them the opportunity to charge him with something. Mm-hmm. So they go into the interrogation room, guns blazing, so to speak. They're shouting at him. They tell him what they've recovered from the burn pile behind his stepfather's house. And they're yelling at him and saying, "We know you did this. We know you did this." And Niels holds his hands over his ears and starts going, "La, la, 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 la. I'm not listening to you. La, la, la."
Wow.
Yeah. Like Dumb and Dumber. Yeah,
it's exactly what it is. You want to hear the most annoying sound?
Exactly. Just like Dumb and Dumber.
Yep.
And that was the end of that. You know, la, 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 I'm not listening. Interview over.
Wow.
Then here we go. When it's time for Niels to get his rec time, his time outside to breathe fresh air, he's in the yard. Don't know how much of a yard there was at the Wayne County Jail. I've seen pictures. It's a tiny little jail. But he's out there with Sheriff's Deputy Blake Adams.
Okay.
And he's got to have a chaperone.
Right.
And Blake Adams is pulling that duty. And because it's a small town, these two guys know each other. This teeny tiny little town where everybody knows everybody. So these two guys know each other. Both of them have motorcycles. And Niels is out there smoking and chit-chatting about his motorcycle. Mm-hmm. I would say hog, but I don't want to give this guy that much credit that he has a Harley.
Yeah.
But Niels tells Black, "Look it, they're making me out to be some kind of monster. They're acting like I'm Jeffrey Dahmer or something. I'm not that kind of guy." aren't ya?
Yeah.
And Blake tells him, "Look at yourself." I'm paraphrasing. "I'm not assigned to this case, and you need to say whatever it is you want to say to the guys that are." And Niels tells Blake, "I want to tell my side of the story." And Blake says, "Great. I'm taking you back inside, and you can tell the investigators, Detective J.B. Fletcher." You know this guy's nickname has to be Fletch.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Detective J.B. Fletcher. He's got to be Fletch.
Yeah.
If we've got a Stumpy or Stump,
Stump. Yeah.
He's got to be Fletch.
Yeah.
Anyway, Deputy Adams gets him back in the interrogation room. And this time, Niels has another news story to tell.
Oh, jeez.
Niels says that a couple of weeks ago, he was at Sims Tavern and Johnny, her other ex-husband and father to Mike and Mindy, walks in. And the two of them talked about how they'd both been married to Sue, I guess as two ex-husbands might do. But he tells police they talked about how she screwed both of us over. And Niels isn't just angry that she divorced him 10 days after they were married and had him shipped off to Utah to serve a sentence for 18 months or 16 months. When he got back to Wayne City, Sue had sold a car that Niels thought belonged to him.
Okay.
But it wasn't him. He didn't murder Sue and Mindy. This is, you know, Niels is telling the police. It's not me.
Sure.
I didn't murder Sue and Mindy.
Right.
Johnny did.
Okay.
Johnny Marshall killed his ex-wife and his own daughter. And he tells police, "I was only involved in the disposal of the bodies." Niels says on the 4th of July, Johnny, Sue, and Mindy picked him up at his house in Sue's Oldsmobile. Johnny is driving, and a fight is going on in the car because of Mindy.
Okay.
Niels tells them Mindy is pregnant, and they're yelling at each other over whether or not 13-year-old Mindy should get an abortion. Hmm. But more than that, Niels tells them that part of the fight was the fact that Johnny was the father of the baby.
Ugh, God.
That Johnny had been sexually abusing his own daughter, and now she was pregnant.
Wow.
And a fight breaks out in the car, and according to Niels, Johnny grabs the back of Mindy's hair. Sue tries to get out of the car, but Johnny puts a gun to her head so she can't get out. But Niels says it's at this point that he got out of the car and just started walking to his sister's house, leaving Sue and Mindy with Johnny.
Okay.
And a gun to their heads.
Right.
But yet he was going to go get gas for the car.
Jeez.
None of his BS adds up.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
Not a mental giant.
Well, we're not dealing with a mens a candidate here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They pressure Niels, "Did you hear any gunfire?" And he says, "No." Now, if you've ever heard a gun go off,
Especially five times?
Yeah,
a 32 caliber, yeah.
Five times. Sue's shot twice in the head. Mindy shot three times in the head. You're going to hear it. And if you're in the middle of the country, in the middle of nowhere, you're really going to hear it.
Yep.
It's going to echo a lot.
Yep.
So they stay on him. And by this time, Niels Christian Nielsen is crying. And they tell him, Niels, son, you lie like a cheap rug.
Yep.
And he says, nope, I am telling you the truth. But what Niels has done in his confession of, quote, only getting rid of bodies, end quote, is that he's confessed to being involved in the cover-up and disposal of the bodies.
Right.
And now, even though he's saying, I didn't kill anyone, I only got rid of Sue and Mindy's corpses, they don't have to worry about keeping him past the 48 hours now, because he's going to be charged with two counts of concealment of a homicidal death.
Right.
So Niels goes back to his cell. Police are all looking at each other because they're like, we know Johnny Marshall's alibi is airtight.
Yeah.
We've checked him out. He was with all these people all day on the 4th. I think they had photographs of him with everybody on the 4th. And he was at work all day. And they also checked with Dr. Hines, the pathologist, who tells them, even though the remains are horribly burned and they're in this horrible state, he could tell for a fact Mindy was not pregnant. Johnny had also told the police earlier in the week that the last time he got to see Mindy was on Sunday, June 18th, Father's Day.
Gotcha.
So he's confessed to getting rid of the bodies. Niels has confessed of getting rid of these bodies and burning them and putting them in bags and dumping them in the pond, which is, by the way, walking distance from where Niels is living with his stepdad and mom. Mm. Police also have that furring strip that was used to wedge against the accelerator on Sue's car that matches the ones found in the grass by a trailer on George Lathrop's property. They've also matched a bloody fingerprint on the car to Niels Christian Nielsen.
Oh, could it get any worse for this guy?
But finally, the ballistics report comes back. Mm. And all of the 32 caliber shells retrieved from the bodies, from the car, in the gym bag, in the fire pit, they're all from one gun. George Lathrop's 32 caliber semi-automatic pistol.
And there you go.
Yep.
Can we get a little bum-bum?
Amen is what we need to get.
Yeah.
On July 10th, during the preliminary hearing, as the prosecutor is reading the charges, two counts of murder, one, two counts of concealment of homicidal death, one count of theft, he stole the toolbox, and felony possession of a handgun. Now, remember, Niels is still on probation.
Jeez. Wow.
But while they're in this preliminary hearing, there's a glass partition between Niels and the DA. And Niels hits his head against the glass and yells at the prosecutor, "F*** off."
Oh, wow. What was his point? Jeez.
To which the prosecutor tells the judge, "Your Honor, we will be seeking the death penalty."
There you go. Boom. Boom shakalaka.
Now, the prosecution tried to get a change of venue, but it was denied.
Mm-hmm.
Almost 1 year later, on May 27th, the trial begins, and Judge Lauren Lewis was going to have his hands full in the courtroom. During the 10-day trial, Niels Christian Nielsen would tell the judge to f*** off. He spit on people. He had to be restrained after outbursts in the courtroom. Not the behavior the defense team needs out of their defendant.
Yeah, can you imagine being that guy's his lawyer and having to put up with that kind of stuff?
Well, he's even going to spit on them, so there's that.
Jeez. So they got that going for him.
You got that going for him.
Which is nice.
But Niels Christian Nielsen is kicked out of the courtroom on more than one occasion for, quote, courtroom etiquette and violent outbursts, end quote.
Wow.
Yeah, I think telling the judge to F off will get you hauled out of the courtroom.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. I hear you're not supposed to do that in the courtroom.
State's attorney Barry Vaughn says, here's what happened.
Okay.
Sue and Mindy picked up Niels on the way to the 4th of July fireworks and celebration. He kills them both before arriving at the fireworks show. He parks the car on the gravel road at his mother and stepdad's property, George and Vinnie Lathrop, and then he watches the fireworks alone. He removed the bodies, took the car to the pond just east of where he's living with his parents. He wedges the furring strip into the gas pedal, waits for the car to go all the way into the pond and sink, which it doesn't.
Right.
Then he walks away anyway. And the next day, he burns the bodies, stuffs them into duffel bags, and dumps them in a pond just east of where he's living. Hmm. Both of these ponds, the car and the bodies, they're both within walking distance of his stepfather and mother's home. At least he's sticking close to home.
Yeah.
Neil's defense attorney, James Ed Dull, says that it's all circumstantial evidence. Nobody saw Neil's murder Sue and Mindy. Nobody saw him burn their bodies or dump them. Ed Dull tells the jury that Neil's Christian Neils left the car and started walking away when Johnny Marshall killed Sue and Mindy. But Johnny drove up beside him and showed Neils the bodies in the trunk of the car. And Ed Dull will say that Neils ditched the bodies, but he never saw the murders with his own eyes. Neil said that he burned the bodies because Johnny Marshall threatened him. Even though all the evidence points to him, Neil's own mother says on the witness stand that he got in the car that night with Sue and Mindy. But his stepfather says that Neil's didn't have possession of his gun during the time of the murders. You mean the gun that matches the ballistics report, George?
Jeez.
Okay.
Oh, these people are just mental giants.
The defense used Sue's upcoming trial on possession of cocaine as a source of the murders, a drug deal gone bad. But the sheriff, Jerry Jocelyn, said there's no evidence that drugs were involved in this at all. And she had gotten really involved in her church, and I think her church members were behind her 100%. She'd gotten clean, she was on the right path,
right.
And she and Mindy spent a lot of time at church.
Okay.
June 13th, 1996, the prosecution and defense give closing arguments, and the jury deliberates for 3.5 hours.
That's usually not a good sign.
It's either really good or really bad.
Yeah, in this case, I'm going to say it's really bad for the defense.
They find him guilty of 2 counts of murder one and 2 counts of concealing a homicide. Mm. Now, after the verdict is read, Niels Christian Nielsen smiles at Sue and Mindy's family in the courtroom. Then he spit on the prosecutors, yelled, "F you" to the judge, Lauren Lewis. He flips off everybody in the room, and then he flips a table in the courtroom and falls backwards.
Nice exit, pal.
I read one newspaper article. It was like people were running everywhere. The bailiff, everybody's running, you know, because he's out of control.
Wow.
On June 18th, he is given the death sentence and carted away to Menard Correctional Facility in Southern Illinois. Mm. In the year 2003, the governor of Illinois, George Ryan, commuted all death sentences to life in prison. And in 2011, Governor Pat Quinn abolished the death penalty in Illinois. Mm. So after all is said and done, Mike, Sue's son, he left Diesel Mechanic School. Sue's family has never been the same, as you might imagine.
Sure.
But this little town has never been the same either. 28 years later, to this day, this little town is still the same size.
Wow.
And they are still traumatized by this crime.
Of course.
Neil's Christian Nielsen sits in the pen. He'll be there for the rest of his life.
Wow.
But that is the story of Sue and Mindy Marshall. That's all I have to say about that. Hey, Hitch to Homicide listeners, have you read any good books lately, or have you listened to any good books? All of the Sex and Lies series books, as well as the Jane Doe series, are available on Audible and iTunes. Hotter than hell in half of Alabama, the Sex and Lies series begins with Sex, Lies, and Sweet Tea. There are 9 books to listen to in that series alone. Left as a newborn to die in a dumpster, she has no name. Tossed from foster home to foster home, she has no family. With no known past, she's deemed a perfect fit for a task force Washington denies exists. A selective assassin for the United States government, Jane Doe tracks down known terrorists on domestic soil. The Jane Doe books have been called a bit military, a bit assassin, and a bit genius. Start the new year by listening to a good book by me, Chris Calvert, on Audible or iTunes, Or if you'd like to read, go to chriscalvert.com and download some free books. And thanks for being a listener of Hitch to Homicide.
Niels Christian Nielsen.
Chaz Michael Michaels.
Yeah, exactly. I think that, you know, guys like that, they deserve the death penalty.
Absolutely.
But then you look at it and you go, I don't know which is worse. If they just get killed and they're over and it's done with, or if they have to spend the rest of their life in prison staring at four walls.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm kind of torn between the, not that I have anything against the death penalty. I don't. But just to be able to know that they're going to be just.
Well, I think there's still the death row, which means they have way less privileges than other inmates because they're not going anywhere. They're there for life. Yeah. He's, you know, he's there for the rest of his life. Yeah. I don't know. What I was thinking as we started to come back was he could have been a bless your heart if nobody was dead.
Just
because
an idiot. Gee whiz.
He's stupid. I don't like to use that word.
He's a dumb criminal.
But this guy's an idiot. Who tells the judge in your case to F off?
I know.
You mean you're just asking for it?
I know.
Stupid.
Well, speaking of stupid criminals, let's do a little bless your heart. Okay, the first one is Santa Claus, you're not.
Okay.
A stupid criminal was caught after he fell down a chimney while escaping the roof of a house he had just broken into. All right, police in Maastricht, Holland, I think that's how you pronounce it, arrested the 33-year-old after being called out by the house owners who had heard his calls for help. The man had tried to flee out the roof window with his booty of cash and jewelry, but tumbled in the dark and got stuck inside the chimney.
You know what that reminds me of? Right. This is showing my age. Gremlins.
Oh, yeah.
Where she talks about how her dad got stuck coming down the chimney. Yeah. She doesn't celebrate Christmas.
All right, next. Safety first.
Okay.
Yeah, that's always important. The two criminal masterminds planned their heist carefully. They knew the courier would have a suitcase full of cash. They waited for his car to pass, then pursued him at high speed, shooting at the vehicle until the courier was forced to pull over. Armed robbers made off with what they thought was a suitcase full of cash. They were in for a surprise. Back at their secret location, the bandits prepared to force the locks and spring the cash. That's when they noticed their plan had gone horribly wrong. Instead of taking the money, they made off with a first aid kit. Police spokesman Johann Steinlich said, if there was an award for dumbest crooks, they would be certainly in the running.
We're talking about a lot of them. Yeah. I thought you were going to say, it made me think of the Big Lebowski. It's just a big thing full of underwear, dirty underwear.
Exactly. One of my favorite movies. All right. Number three, Nervous Nelly. This is a short one. Two robbers in Michigan, USA, entered a record shop and nervously waved their revolvers around.
There's still record shops in the United States? Yep. Where? I want to go.
I know.
It's because vinyl's back, I bet.
Yeah, it's true. The first one shouted, "Nobody move!" When his partner moved, the startled first bandit shot him. Oh, my gosh. Isn't that great? Uh-oh, she's having a laughing fit, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Are you serious?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
I don't know. You can. Okay, keep going.
All right. Last but not least.
Oh, Lord.
The next time you think you're having a bad day, a man who had spent 20 years in prison for bank robbery back in 1963 thought it would be a good idea to try again in 2003 in Spotsylvania County, Virginia. He demanded and received several thousand dollars from two surprise bank cashiers, and as he fled, he spilled $100 notes in the wake as he attempted to stuff the cash into his pockets and get away. When he reached his hired getaway car, this stupid criminal realized that he had locked his keys inside. This bungling burglar promptly took to his heels and fled the scene on foot, followed by two passerbys who grabbed him. The fleeing felon attempted to pull out his gun, but failed and shot himself in the leg. But he kept fighting his would-be arresters, one of whom shot the suspect. The local police have charged the robber with 8 felonies, including robbery and 2 counts of attempted murder. The suspect was attended to in the hospital and recovered. Yeah, that's called a really bad day. So there you have it.
Oh, my gosh. Those were really good. I have tears.
Thank you.
I have tears.
Thank you.
If you have a bless your heart, are you going to shoot your partner in crime in the middle of a bank
heist?
That's
the best one. I should have ended with that one.
Go to hitchtohomicide.com. There's pull-down menu. Yep. You could also suggest a case. Yep. Just don't suggest a case about any idiots. I've had enough idiots for this podcast today. That's my amazing husband out there.
And that's my beautiful bride in the booth.
Join us next time on Hitch to Homicide.
Bye, y'all.